You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with your host, James Creviston.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. It's James, and today I'm going to have another James with me, but this James is cooler and better and has done a lot more than I've ever done. But someday I hope to be not only as successful as him, but as handsome as him. So please welcome the very funny, the very talented, the amazing kind of mentor to me, Mr. James P. Conley. James, how's it going?
Yeah, let's bring him in. Far be it from me to disagree with that level of opening. Usually I hand someone an intro and I think you outdid my own narcissism, so thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for being here. I think you forgot the word staggering. Other than that, I thought you knew.
I apologize.
It.
Yeah, yes. I'll go back and edit that in.
Just drop in the word staggering. So, yeah. What's up, man? Good to be here. Good to be here.
So, I'm so glad to have you. I don't know if you remember this interaction. We were at Flappers. We were doing a show together. I talked about being a veteran. I came off stage. You took me aside. And you recommended, I believe, VME to me at the time. I think it was called something else before that too.
But yeah, it was Veterans in Media and Television, and then they changed it to Veteran Media and Entertainment. They wanted to broaden it out. Yeah.
And thanks to you, I went and signed up for it, and then I got to go do a tour of DC Comics with them, which was awesome. Right.
Wow. You know what? Had I known that I was gonna give you something that I didn't get, I wouldn't have given it to you. I would have taken it for myself. And then I would have recommended you to go in. That's awesome. That's fantastic.
So I was like, man, this is great. And since then, I've done a couple other things with them. I ended up in they pushed out one of those things for the veterans writing groups for the WGA writing group thing. So I got to do that and like all those kind of things. And all of it, thanks to you, like 100% thanks to you. I mean,
you're welcome.
I did a little work. So, you know.
No, but you know what? That's the best thing about when I first got to LA and I ran into these guys. And it was just all these veterans from all the different parts of the entertainment industry, front, behind the camera. And it was just like, every time I meet a veteran, I'm like, look, call these people, go to a meeting, instant plug-in, instant connection. And, you know, it's just great. So I'm glad you were able to squeeze a little life out of it. That's awesome.
I am. And then, you know, I've watched your comedy. I've watched you do stuff. Like, and I've just been always in awe because you're always doing things. You're always growing. Your stand-up gets better every single time I see it, which, I mean, it's amazing already. So it's weird that it gets better when it's like, okay, well, that's, you know.
You need to talk to my son. And they see what he said. It gets better. It is better all the time.
Well, I just watched, like, you had the clip the other day. Like, you went to the Dodger game and then you did a clip about the Dodger dog and hot dogs. And I always think that too. I'm like, man, hot dogs are so expensive at Dodger Stadium. But yeah, you know, it's a good bit. So I'm sure there's going to be more to that. But
it's absolutely legit. I went to a game and I remember going to get, I got a hot dog and I wanted to get a sec. I was already upset about the price of the hot dog, but I was hungry. So I went to get a second hot dog. And she said, well, we don't have any Dodger dogs left. All we have is Super Dodger dogs. And I'm like, okay, an extra buck. And I asked her, I asked her the difference. And I said, is it just because it's all, is it any bigger? And she goes, I don't know. And I'm like, okay. I'm just like, all right, here's your extra dollar. So I didn't even know what the super is I paid for, but I paid for it.
I get two Dodger dogs. I always get the regular Dodger dog there. And then I go up to the Loge level that's up there and I get the, whatever the specialty dog is for the game that they do. So if, you know, they're playing the Phillies, it might be like a cheesesteak dog, or if you're playing, you know, whatever.
Yeah, so. See that? It's so different. I take my son to a game now. And you can do that. You can go, you know what? I want to go to the Loge level. I'm going to go here. When I was a kid, there was two types of hot dogs. There was the stuff that the guy carried, the hot dog. And then there was the politically incorrect Polish sausage. And that was the only thing existing. And I didn't know what a Polish sausage was as a kid, so I didn't want one. So all you had to do, and that was it. You didn't go anywhere. The hot dogs came to you.
They don't come to you anymore. That's the terrible part. They have peanuts, ice cream, and then like some weird icy stuff and beer. That's all that can get brought to you, apparently. So it is what it is.
It's strange that I would miss a very, you know, an unkempt middle-aged man screaming and throwing food at me, but I do. I think that was a great part of the game as a kid. You're like, that guy, he looks like he's 60 years old. And he's like, hot dog. And he's winging it there. So I miss it.
That's
So, to make my son feel at home when I cook dinner, I just throw it at him from the kitchen. And I make him scream for the meat that I'm cooking. And then I go, hot dog! Steak. And then I don't give him his change, just so it's authentic. I don't give him his change.
Hopefully, I'm not looking forward to like mac and cheese night there at your house.
No, it's a very messy house, though. Very messy house, yeah.
So you were in the military, and then when you got out, what made you get into comedy? Like, were you funny while you were in? Like, what was that transition like?
You know, I was, when I was in college, I had two buddies, very different style, funny, but very fearless. And so in college, they kind of got me doing stunts and stuff in public in college, nothing illegal, obviously, but just kind of like doing stuff. And they were both very funny. One was more of a performer and one was more obtuse. And so I really loved it, but you know, they had fun and I'm like, nah, this is awesome. I want to keep doing this. So when I got into the Marine Corps and I was in Desert Storm and I was attached to the battalion headquarters at the time. And so the colonel had we had all these reserve officers attached to us during the war. And, you know, we were kind of having difficulty fitting in because they were civilians complaining about their lives. And we're like, what lives? You don't have a life. You're a Marine. We don't care that you had a life. We don't have lives. So he wanted to have a dinner and he wanted to roast all the officers. And so he called me in his office because I had a reputation being about as much of a, you know, smart aleck as you can be and still be a dignified Marine officer. And he wanted to roast them. So he asked me to write him jokes. So I was like, okay. So I went back. So I was probably the only comedian that started by being given a lawful command to make a colonel funny. And I had like 24, 48 hours. So I went back and wrote a bunch of jokes with the other lieutenants. And I was like, I turned them in. And then an hour before the dinner, my executive officer knocked on the hatch of the ship. And he said, hey, this colonel wants to see you. And I said, oh crap, I crossed the line. I must have, you know, so I went in there to get, you know, ripped. And instead, the colonel was there with another major and they were just, he goes, so we want to ask you, how did you see this joke being delivered? And I was like, oh, tips. Okay. So I did it for them. So he killed that dinner. And so I said, okay, if I don't die during the war, then I'm going to come back and I'm going to do this myself. So, and great button to that, like 25 years later, I did a show in Florida and he was going to be in the audience. And he brought the sergeant major from the battalion. So they got to see me do a headline set for an organization that he was a member of. And I was like, how cool was that? So that was a full circle. So
did you roast him while you were there? Like, did you?
No, I still fear these people.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Do you think part of the colonel's killing that night is that he had the rank, so he has to get like you have to give him laughs?
Well, but that's he's a very funny guy, very good speaker, and obviously the jokes were well written, so I think we should give me more credit than that. But the people knew that I wrote it, so the other staff officers, I remember them. You know, I could feel them looking over at us, like, yeah, we colonel's saying it, but we wrote this, so like, so it's kind of a way for a lower rank to communicate your true feelings. Because the colonel's going to say it and you're untouchable. So yeah, when I got out, I got out of the Marine Corps and then I decided I was going to give it a shot. So I got a job and I was stationed at Camp Pendleton in San Diego and I looked at the want ads and they were looking for karaoke host mobile disc jockeys and they were paying $25 an hour. And I'm like, okay, it'll get me in front of people. And so I started doing that.
That's
all over
awesome.
San Diego. Yeah, I got paid. And you know, there were two types of hosts. There's singers who think they're funny, or comedians who can pull off a song. And unfortunately, I was neither.
Yeah. I was going to say, see, I wouldn't be able to sing, but I can make people laugh. I think I can get that.
Yeah. So I could carry a tune. So I was like, okay, I would use the stage time. And so I did that for about a year and a half. And then I'm like, you know what? I got to go to LA and I got to try stand-up comedy. So
what was the first club you went to in LA to go get on stage?
I actually signed up for the very first, it was Mitzi Shore's daughter, the late Mitzi Shore's daughter, the late Sandy Shore. Unfortunately, they both passed. Sandy Shore was doing her first comedy school class ever. It was at UCLA Extension. And in that class was Brody Stevens and Peter Sprite, some other guys. And so, you know, we just did it. And you graduated. I did my first spot at the original room in the comedy store. And so it was pretty crazy. And then after that, I just, you know, for you go from a class And then you go to the open mic circuit and you realize, oh God, this is a miserable career choice.
Yeah. You go. I have her book, by the way. I have Sandy Shore's book. I never got to take the class, but I had the book.
I was in the first class, and it was an 8-week class. And then, she kept trying to say how we're going to refine this 3 minutes, but it was the only stage time I had was every class. So I would come in with a new 3 minutes every class, because I wanted to just try material. And so then you get to graduation and realize I had refined nothing. Yeah. And I still have the tape of my first 3 minutes. And the shock to me is that I proudly showed that tape to my college buddies. what friends they were to watch that tape. I believe my opening joke was, my name is Jim Conley, and that's pretty much the written portion of my show. That was a big joke. Though. That was the big joke, baby. That carried me for 2.5 minutes.
So then the open mic circuit in LA is probably the hardest open mic circuit I would think anywhere. I mean, even if you lived in a small town and only had one open mic, it would probably be better than trying to do open mics in LA. Do you agree?
Yeah, it's brutal. I was fortunate in that I joined there was a stand-up comedy troupe that had formed in the Valley, and I was... So it was a troupe of people, and, you know, it was run by Barb and Steve North, and they were teaching stand-up comedy, and it was a group. So I was able to, I got into that. So while I was kind of dipping my toes into the amateur scene, I was also working with this troupe. So I kind of did it parallel track. And so then when I developed enough, you know, get that good 7 to 10 minute set, then I started to just break away from the troupe more and spend more time. But then I could show up in places and I had a set, like, you know, oh, okay, he's new, but that's a funny set. And then you could get booked again places. So that really helped me to show up on the open mic scene with an act and not just show up with nothing. Yeah.
That's so funny. Steve North was my first comedy coach. He was the first person that I went to, because I didn't know anybody in LA. I like didn't know how it worked, but I found his ad somewhere and I went and I had like that one-on-one session with him first, and we went over everything, and then I went to his class for, I don't know, 3 months, two or three months, something like that. And but man, I'm glad I while it was like I didn't like the character portion of it, just because that's not what I wanted to do, I love the every week is an open mic. Every week you're working on stuff. Yeah. Every week you get up in front of people. And that for me was the best part of the whole thing, because he really forced you to do it. And you had to work jokes. You couldn't just try to get up and riff. You had to write and work. So he instilled in me that little piece that just has been going since then.
Yeah, he taught a lot of good. They teach good set structure, to learn how to put together a set and to learn some of the mechanics of stand-up that could take you years to figure out. You know, the pain, the suffering, the writing, that's on you. But some of the mechanics, you know, they would say, yeah, it's a good way to pick up some stuff. So you get out there, you don't feel like you don't know anything yet.
So now you tour, you're a touring comedian, you go all over. Where is your, what's your favorite place to go? And what do you have, like a road horror story by chance?
Oh, well, you know, everyone has a road horror story. mine was, I think I was on the road with Don Friesen, and Don and I met in the San Francisco Comedy Competition. We were young and thought we were funny, and some nights we were, and some nights we weren't. And so he took me on the road, and we did a show. I used to have this really loud jacket I used to wear. It's kind of I did a character, and so I had this jacket, like it was my lucky jacket, and I would reach into my pockets and pull out these things. Hey, this is my lucky penny, or this is my lucky comb. And then I would reach into my jacket and I would pull out this giant velvet Elvis. And go, oh, it's my lucky velvet Elvis, you know. Stupid joke, very fun. And then, but I lost it one night in Moscow, Idaho, and I was crushed. And then I went on stage at a bar, and I just, is that first time I just really got my butt handed to me in a gut-wrenching set, and I was being heckled mercilessly and no one was laughing, but one of the heckles was so funny. I just remember thinking to myself, I'm going to use that for my act. And I will use the pain that's happening here tonight. And that's going to happen. I was like, that was one of the first I realized this misery. Sometimes you can walk away and go, okay, you win, but I shall take that joke and I will use it and get paid to tell that joke.
That's awesome. Yeah, Don's amazing. He's been on the podcast. He's such a good guy. Just so good. What's your favorite place that you've ever performed, like anywhere?
That's always a tough question, man. I just, you know, I'm such a so zen about this. Like the last place I performed is probably my favorite place, but I don't really have a favorite like club or favorite venue. I go like a lot of different places. I'm a huge fan because I do a lot of hosting too. I really like to go places that just make my spider sense pop so that I have to pay attention and I can't just roll in and feel safe. So, not that I want to have a horrible experience, but it's just, you know, like in town, the Comedy Magic Club in Hermosa Beach is like just insane how their commitment to making the room and the stage fertile for you to just do what you do and feel appreciated. So, and of course, Flappers has been fantastic, me and Burbank. But yeah, hitting that stage at Comedy Magic Club the first time and doing well and walking off stage and eating a filet mignon in the back, and then somebody pays you and you drive home and you go, what just happened? This is Los Angeles. I was treated with dignity and I got paid and I was fed and they told me to come back.
I know. I can't wait till the day that I'm good enough to do that club, because I've been there a few times to see stand up and I always feel like, wow, this is the place. Like I saw Tom Papa there, and normally the security will keep you from talking to anybody, right? They're like, I was like, can I talk to him? They're like, no, get out of here. Like, you know, like you paid, but now you're done. And he happened to be standing off to the side, and I was like, please just ask him if I can have 1 minute of his time just to talk to him. And so they're like, fine, whatever. Like, and I think me having my beautiful wife there was probably helpful too. So they went and got him and he came out and talked to me, but he talked to me for like half an hour and gave me like advice about comedy or whatever. It was like the best day. I was like, this is awesome. But he was like, the club was amazing. And I will always remember that place. My goal is to do that club one day.
It's a great goal. It's supposed to open up again. And I'll never forget getting in there. I was at, I did a spot at the Hollywood Improv. Somebody wanted to look at me for something and he brought a friend, and that friend saw me and he said, hey, you know who'd really like you? And he knew the owner of the other club. So nothing became of that showcase up, but then I got a spot over there. And then they said, yeah, start calling in for spots. And I was just like, you know, you show up and you see the other people in the green room. You're like, you can't. I mean, I performed there one time and I was just hosting. It was Jay Leno and Jimmy Brogan. And I get there. This was like one of the last sets I did before the pandemic. And I get off stage and the manager's like, hey, you know, James, we got a little bit of a problem. And I'm like, oh, is Jay not here? And he goes, no, some of Jay's friends, you know, came in the green room. I said, oh, you want me to stay out of the green room? He goes, no, it's just, he said, they were trying to figure out what to do. It's Jerry Seinfeld and George Wallace. And I was like, I didn't want to go in. But then, you know, Jay came out and he was talking to me. I'd worked with him before. And he said, do you know Jerry? And I'm like, no, I don't know Jerry. So he called Seinfeld out. And then, you know, I'm talking to the two of them in the hallway. And I was just like, just maintain your composure, man. Just act cool. You're another comic. Just chatting it up with two of the greatest joke writers in the history of the world.
Of all time.
And then Jerry Seinfeld was going to go on stage to work on new material. He has his little yellow pad. And then I'm just sitting in the green room with Jay Leno. And I'm like, okay, Jay and I are sitting at the same table watching Jerry Seinfeld do new jokes. And then Jerry gets off stage and comes in the room. And then I watch Jay and Jerry. Hey, what'd you think? And they're pitching jokes back and forth. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe they haven't asked me to leave. That I'm just sitting here watching all this. So that was like that club, you get those moments where it doesn't matter. Nothing happens to your career. It doesn't matter if anybody cares. It's just like you got to hang out with these guys. They hung out with you for the night. They accepted you as a peer for the night. And you got to just see all this stuff. And then you go home and, you know, your life doesn't change, but you get a sweet picture.
No, that moment would be amazing, man, because those are two of my favorite comedians. I used to have this thing where, well, until the pandemic, my wife and I would go every year to Vegas to go see Jerry at Caesars. And usually he does the same stuff, like he adds some jokes or whatever, but he does a lot of the same material that I've seen before. But every time, it's like watching a magic show. Yeah. You know that that's not really magic, and you know kind of how it works, but it's always still magical.
I saw him once at the Palladium, and I remember I was working on this bit about coffee because I'm a big coffee fan, and I had a little bit I'm working on. And then I listened to him, and he did like 5 minutes on coffee. I remember thinking, I'm out. I'm not going to write that. I remember I was with my ex-wife, and I told her, she said, why are you? And I said, you don't understand. I just witnessed 5 minutes on coffee. I'll never be able to create that. I'm not going to waste the world's time with my mediocre take on coffee. But I could just say, here's a link to Jerry Seinfeld. His is fantastic. Enjoy the routine.
That's exactly right. You watch him do something and you go, wow, that's I'm not going to do that now. Like, I'm not
no,
even
it's like, trying to. I don't know. Yeah, it was just like, you know, I'm like, I quit. I'm out. I'll find something else.
Yeah, that's awesome. What? So you've been doing comedy for 20 years?
Like 25 plus years, yeah.
Yeah, 25 years, yeah. What piece of advice, if your younger self wanted to start tomorrow, he came to you, said, hey, I want to be a comedian. Younger self comes and says that. What piece of advice would you be? I'm about to hear.
I'm thinking after he gets the back of my hand across his face. I knew you were gonna... Do you realize what you're about to do, my young Jedi? Are you sure you have what it takes? I'm just thinking about. I would sit down and go, "You're not that good. You're just not that good." You know, the only thing I would tell my inner self is let go. I would tell him to let go. Don't hold on so tight to perfection. Don't hold on so much to your ego of feeling good about what you did. Just take your ideas and do them. And everything is information. And that took me years to get to that place. And I would tell my younger self, just do that. Do the stuff that's silly. Do the stuff that's stupid. Do the stuff that's weird. Don't just try to put on a great show all the time. Some of the stage time is for you to be awkward and you know, and for people to go home and shake their head and go, that kid wasted his whole life. And so if I could have gotten there sooner, I would have loved it. I mean, I got there when I got there and, you know, because people used to talk about, oh, hey, you get to get to places you can write on stage. And I'm like, how the hell do you do that? And now, you know, you do it and you're like, oh, I see. You gotta get out of your way and you just gotta let your mouth and brain work by themselves and then just go back and listen to it later.
Yep. That's why I was telling you.
For the record, sets. I would still strike myself first, regardless of that information. I would still strike my younger self, just as a point of order, to exert dominance over that arrogant guy who thinks I'm going to give him advice for free.
Great. I'm getting slapped next time I see him.
I was going to say, James, good to see you. I've talked to you twice now.
Advice is not free, James.
That's going to be my new. So if you see me in a club and you see me strike a younger comic, that just means I'm about to dispense some wisdom.
That would be awesome.
What's James doing? He's just helping the kids. He's just he's bringing life to the children. He's
setting them straight.
Setting them straight, man. Just locking down on them, yeah.
Now, do you get to go as a veteran? I haven't had this chance yet, but... And I tried booking a show and a kind of semi tour up to Alaska. So I tried to do military bases. Have you been able to do military bases or do shows for veterans or anything like that? Like,
oh yeah, I've done tons of those. I mean, it was like I ran into someone. I did a Boston Comedy Festival and I ran into a guy who did a tour and I toured with the Comics on Duty world tour for years. And so, you know, all over Iraq, Afghanistan, Europe, Bosnia. And then domestically too. And now the good news is, you know, people just find me. They Google, you know, comedian, military, and, you know, a handful of people pop up. And so I try to do it every year. I work with the Armed Services Arts Partnership. They're a great group. If you don't know who they are, ASAP.org. They take, you know, military veterans, people in the military, their families and veterans, and help them process back and deal with a lot of issues like PTSD and other assimilations. And through the arts, through mostly stand-up and acting and poetry and all kinds. It's a wonderful place. I wish it existed when I came out. I wish someone that said, hey, you're a veteran. You want to come here and do this. So I work with them, but they do a lot of shows too. And they're just creating a whole generation of veteran comedians who are going to be out. And it's just fantastic that that voice is going to come out and be heard. But yeah, I try to do it. My attitude is if I'm free and I can help, I'll come. And so it's like, you know, if you ask me and it's doable, I'm in. And I'm happy to lend the skill set I have to, you know, help raise money or help for a fundraiser or some night or honoring someone. If I can come, I'll come. So I try to do that. I will do Coast Guard events. I'll do that as well.
You are kind, sir, because I would not. Coast Guard. I was in the Navy. I would never.
I have not. Lowered my standards to Space Force yet. I'm still holding the line at Coast Guard.
I almost went and did Space Force in Alaska. except for that the timeline didn't meet up to what we needed to do. They have clear, it used to be clear Air Force Base. Now it's clear Space Force Base.
I thought you were going to say, I was going to do a Space Force Base, but it doesn't exist. So it's a fake. That's cool.
So I had the opportunity, but the timeline didn't meet up, so we couldn't go do it. But I would have, it was also 2 hours in the opposite direction of where we needed to be going. So I was like, okay, we can't.
James, my guess is Space Force doesn't want comedians doing shows yet. We'll just literally show up and destroy it. Like, I think our whole existence would be to go, what the hell's wrong with you? What are you doing here, you guys? What space have you protected so far?
I was going to go because they were like, you could come look at our gift shop and buy gear and stuff. I was going to buy like a whole uniform and just dress up and roast them in the Space Force uniform. That's what that's good. I had another question. Now I just went blank.
That's okay. Sometimes when you talk about Space Force, it throws you off. Maybe that's really their skill. Maybe they don't do anything to fight. We start talking about them and then we get distracted and the enemy doesn't attack. And that's how we stay safe in America. So maybe it's more of a concept than it is an actual service, James.
So what do you have coming up? Where are you going to be? Where can people find you?
I am findable. You can find me always website, jamespconnelly.tv, or I'm on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. And I'm still kind of hugging a little bit on the West Coast right now, but get out to Vegas, did a dry bar special last year. I taped it end of the year. And so it's in the editing phase now. So hopefully that'll come out soon. That was a lot of fun. And I will let people know when that actually comes out into the ecosystem of comedy. But I'm just trying to get out and work on new material and make myself happy. And popping up a lot in the western side of the United States. Sorry, East Coast. I'll get out there. I promise you, I'll get out there.
The dry bar special, it's 22 or 25 minutes, right? Something like that.
Yeah, I think it was a smart move. They brought it down to 20 to 25 minutes, which opens it up to a whole world of comedians who can deliver 20 to 25 minutes as opposed to 45. So it's smart and it's great. And it's a really professional production. They nail it. You show up, place is packed, happy people. All you got to do is get out there and take care of business and they do the rest. So go get them, James. Get out there.
I am. That's actually part of the reason why I'm going to do the Alaska event. David Studebaker, who also filmed the dry bar and has no idea when it's coming out. He and I are going. I'm going to open for him. I'm going to do 20.
Nice.
And then later this summer, I'm going to go with Darren Carter to Texas, and I'm going to open for him and do 20. So
great.
I've been doing more stuff like that and building this set around a theme so that I can do, you know, the 22, 25-minute type situation.
I think it's a great thing. If you're a comedian and you have 20 to 25 clean minutes, it's great. This is a great way to take those clean minutes and put it into a comedy ecosystem that is looking for it. So, people go back and forth, like, I can't work clean or only some of my material is clean. Great. If you have 20 to 25 clean minutes, put it together and give it to them. And if they say yes, then that portion of your act will, you know, do good for your career. And so I think it's great that they brought it down because, you know, finding someone who can do a clean headline set at 40 to 45 and deliver, that's a tall ask. And there's not that many people that can do that at a high caliber, but 20 to 25. Yeah.
It's great. And too, and then you know, it's easy to watch. 20 to 25 minutes is easy to watch. It's so easy sitting down, having to commit, you know, to an hour or 90 minute special of watching somebody. You're like, okay. And then you're like, okay, the first jokes are good. And it's kind of, you know, dragging in the middle, and now they're finally getting it back, you know, or whatever. It's not like watching old Chris Rock. Like, my favorite is Chris Rock, all old Chris Rock stuff on HBO that he used to do, Bigger and Blacker, all that stuff. And that never felt like a drag to me, but sometimes I watch a special on Netflix and I go, oh, they could have cut that joke. Oh, they should have cut that joke. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, probably some of it's function of being a comic, but I hear you. There's just, you know, I remember, I think, yeah, we watch it a little fine tune, but, I think they've widened their net as to what is a special. Special used to be, you know, a small group of people with a master set of skills get to be on a special. And now a special is just a taped performance that you did well. And it can happen anywhere. I mean, Maria Bamford did one in the living room, which is brilliant.
I love that one, though. That was so good.
Like, so, but that's great. So now comedians have a way to get this out, but it's not the same as when Chris Rock dropped his specials and not when. So, and I don't say that to knock any of us, but, you know, there's a difference when, you know, there's one place to go and only six people get one. It's like, you gotta, everyone's got to be great and they have to have that to deliver. Whereas you're trying to, you know, get 300 comedians who could do 20 minutes, they're going to be good. You're going to get a couple of phenomenal performances and they're going to be good. And that's just enjoyable comedic content. And that's great.
Yeah. And it's going to, and it's good because it's helping comedians bump up their career. So where they go, you know, you might not get that option if you're doing 7 minutes in LA all the time.
Right.
Now you get this 20 minutes or 25, whatever it is. And now it opens the door for you to be going other places. And now you have to learn to stretch. You're going to be going on the road and stretching. Right. And so that's why when Darren offered, hey, you can come with me, we get places and you can open for me. I was like, yeah, I want to do that. I need to stretch. I need to get outside of LA a little bit and stretch. You know, even when I was going to New York a few times, you're getting 7 minutes. You can't stretch in 7 minutes, you know, so you know what that's like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Stretching is key and it's hard. And I used to go like, you know, if I had to do a 25-minute set, you know, I would prepare 20 minutes of material and then force myself to fill five with me. And if you do that over the course of a 25-minute set, they're just little moments that you're trying to amplify, create, kick something up, get yourself. That way you have no choice. You can't, you're not giving yourself enough bullets in the chamber. You've got to figure out a way to make it happen. And then I think that for me, that was a great way. That was something Steve North helped me with because I was doing shows and he would say, you know, when you ad lib and something happens, you're really good off the cuff. But the problem is you wait for things to happen. So he said, you need to create things from the stage. So he's the one that would say, you got a 10-minute spot tonight, 8 minutes of material. That's all you can take. And then that's not scary, you know, covering 1 minute or 2 minutes. It's not scary. It's a little nerve wracking, but it's not scary. And that's how I started to learn how to stretch. Just like come up short and fill time. You have to do it. I look at the clock and go, oh crap, I have 10 minutes. So anyway, and then you just start talking about something. And the next thing you know, either it's funny or at least I used to think to myself, well, they're still paying attention to me. So this obviously can't be horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you go back and listen to it and you go, there's the gold right in that little bit. There's the gold. I got it out. Now I can build something off of that. That's awesome. Well, James, I thank you so much for being on the podcast. Thank you. Thank you for mentoring me. I know from afar sometimes, but it really has meant a lot to me. It really has changed my trajectory. Like I've gotten so many things because of things that people like you have said to me or offered me or, you know, and I'm so appreciative for that. So
You know what? Thank you so much. It's great to hear that because I know everybody who along the way, everybody who, you know, I got off stage and a comic who was way better than me. I've been doing it forever. Will pull me aside and go, hey, I had one say this to me and I've said it to so many comics that I think are doing a great job. I'll pull them off stage and I'll go, the audience was wrong. You're really good. Keep doing it. Because, you know, you can see when a comic feels like it's like, no, you understand, you are amazing. And this is a tight room. And so I thank you're welcome for all the so many people pulled me aside, helped me stress out. I mean, I had to do a festival one time and it was Detroit. Lewis Black was hosting and I was closing the show. And I was so nervous and I was pacing in the back and he looked at me and he goes, are you next? And I said, yes. And I won't say exactly what he said because it's a clean comedy podcast. But he said, he just looked up to me and he said, don't blank this up. And he just walked on stage. And I laughed so hard. I was like, yeah. Okay. And so I was like, it's such a ridiculous thing to say to me. And I went out there so relaxed. And he said something and I ad-libbed and took a shot. And it was like, it was such a good set. I used that festival tape for probably 6 years. Because it was such a good set. But moments before I hit the stage, I was literally imploding on myself, thinking, everyone killed, Lewis Black's hosting, I'm not good enough to do this, I'm going to screw this up. And then when he basically told me not to screw it up, it cracked me up. And so it's great when you do that. So I'm glad whatever I said to you worked out. I'm glad you connected in. I'm glad you're out doing it. And thanks for having me on the podcast, man.
Thank you.
Next time I see you, I will smack the taste out of your mouth, man. It seems to be the thing to do in comedy anyway. So we communicate now by striking each other. Mine's with love. Yeah.
It's not an attack. This is not a Will Smith slap. No. I love you slap. So we're good.
Cute. Yeah. From the bottom of the heart, man. From the bottom of the heart.
There you go. Well, thank you, James. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Go check out James P. Connelly. He's hilarious. If you didn't find him funny here, go get a new sense of humor because it doesn't, I don't know what's wrong with you.
I was going to say, if you didn't find it funny here, go to some other guy. Here's a guy we have, really funny. Check this other guy out.
Go check out Lewis Black. No, I'm just
good. Lewis Black, very professional, Black obviously famous.
He is amazing. Lewis Black is also amazing, but James is awesome.
Lewis is amazing.
You'll find him around LA. You'll find him everywhere. Go check out his stuff. You will laugh. He's great. Thank you again. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please like, subscribe, and have a good one. Bye.
Sorry, Space Force. Didn't mean to take shots.